racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
Change is definitely on the menu in this edition of the Grow Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf. Hi, I'm Bob Bubka. So proud to be here with Jay Randolph Jr., who's the general manager of Normandy Golf Club in St. Louis, better known, though, as STL Golf Geek on Twitter. Jay, we're not only going to talk about some changes that are taking place, but you and I were blessed, and I mean that word blessed, to have the opportunity to spend some time with the famous golf instructor, the little pro Eddie Marantz, and he's played a lot of Crosby clam bakes, and he'll take us back in time. Jay, what a treat that's going to be for our listeners.
He is one of the most unique individuals that our game has ever had, and people that know golf or have known golf the last 70 years, truly, and he's been a part of the fabric of our game. He did it in front of celebrities at Bel Air Country Club and Kings, but also the regular player, and still does today. Was a golf coach at UCLA, played with presidents. I mean, Palmer's friend. I mean, this guy is about as good as it gets. I mean, it really is. It's from a different era.
How about that hand that shook a couple of players' hand in this game of golf? We were talking about it before we came on the air. Tell our listeners what you told me.
Well, Bob, something that really puts it in perspective. How many people have shaken the hand of the great Bobby Jones and also shaken the hand of Tiger Woods? It's not a long list. Jack Nicklaus, it includes. Eddie Marantz, it includes. And I'm humbled to say that it includes my dad as well. It's a unique group, and he's been such a vibrant individual for our game, the king of Southern California golf, Eddie Marantz.
Yeah, it was certainly a treat for us to have him on. You're going to enjoy that later on the show, Grow Room listeners. Before we get involved in golf, what about a word on the Super Bowl, Jay Randolph Jr.? Did your team win? Did you enjoy the game? And more importantly, what did you think of the halftime show?
My team moved to L.A. a couple of years ago. You know, there was a lot of hatred rooting in St. Louis. I didn't buy into that. Stan Kroenke moved his team. He got a better deal. He made more money. He almost tripled the value of his franchise. Now, that doesn't mean I like Stan Kroenke. I'm a history, you know, people that listen to the show can tell I'm a historian to a certain extent. And I mean, this guy Brady is the greatest of all time. I didn't see Jim Brown. I understand how people talk about Jim Brown, but I mean, Brady's the best I've ever seen. The game bored me. And I thought the halftime show could have been better. Now I'll reverse it on you. Did your team win? What did you think of the halftime show? And did you enjoy the game?
My team did not win. I had a keen financial interest in the outcome. It was not what I had hoped for. The halftime show, I had wished that I had devoted that time to bathroom breaks. It would have been far more enjoyable than what I saw on the screen. I thought it was an embarrassment to the NFL to put that on at halftime. I have to bear in mind that several acts declined to perform. So there's trouble in River City there a little bit. But all in all, the game was lousy. Halftime was even worse. But fortunately, there was some great golf out in the desert.
Hey, one thing I did want to say. At 74 years young, the best part of the night might have been Gladys Knight singing the national anthem.
Absolutely. And it was kind of crazy because one of the betting propositions in Las Vegas was how long the national anthem would last. And she said, "Home of the Brave," and which automatically signaled the end of the song. But then she said, the Brave again, which made it go from under to over, and Las Vegas very smart saying they're going to give their money back to whatever side you bet on, because there was a little confusion about the ending. But I agree with you. She was absolutely fantastic. Somebody else that certainly was fantastic, Ricky Fowler. It didn't look like it in that final round, but he finally got the job done. And let me begin with this, Jay Randolph Jr. Ricky Fowler is now 30 years old. That was only his fifth win on the PGA Tour. To me, with his talent at this juncture, I know he has a Players' Championship, but in my opinion, I hate to say it because it sounds derogatory, and maybe it is, because I really like Ricky Fowler. I think he's underachieved.
He may have. You're right, and the book is still open. And this was a big page in that book with all that was happening to him, with the troubles he'd had in final rounds, with the fact that you can date back to when many people thought he should have got his first professional victory at this tournament, and he didn't go for the green, and there was a lot of question about that. So there were all these things coming down on him Sunday with the goofy ruling situation and all that, and yet he was able to muster enough. You also have to remember, Bob, think of all the players that have really announced themselves since Ricky. I mean, Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, just to name a couple of them. So, again, if you ask me right now, probably underachiever, especially without a major. And we'll see where he takes us, but this was big for him.
Yeah, it really was big, Jay, and I was so happy that his entire family was there. His grandfather was there. It was a special day for Ricky Fowler, and this is what he had to say.
The way I was playing this week, I knew it wasn't going to be easy, but I thought it was going to be a lot easier than that out there today. We got dealt a tough day of weather and conditions. There weren't any low scores. It was just kind of grind it out, had a couple tough breaks, and kind of just had to deal with the punches, a couple big ones, but it feels good now. But I tell you, it was definitely not fun out there. It seemed as soon as I kind of got something going, I'd take a step or two back and had to kind of dig myself out of some holes. So definitely happy coming out on top, but yeah, I really don't want to have to go and win tournaments that way.
Well, I think he would revisit that comment and modify it to say he'll win tournaments whatever way it takes, whether they're fun or not. It's not easy to win on the PGA Tour. Of course, much of that final round, Jay, was about that 11th hole and the crazy penalties there. I had never seen anything like that, where a ball opted to move on its own and rolls into a penalty area. Can't call it a water hazard anymore. Rolls into a penalty area, and he gets penalized for it, even though he had nothing to do with the ball going in there.
A disaster. Once again, for the rules of golf. I mean, it just, again, you're staring at the screen going, this doesn't make any sense. I have to believe there'll be some sort of adjustment to it. Ricky handled it tremendously well. There are other players that we know, Bob, that may not have handled it quite as well as he did. But again, it raises the question. The executive producer of our program, Janice Self, and I were talking before the show, and when you make all these changes and you have all these different rules, it takes time to figure out what's right and what's wrong. So I credit them for making a lot of changes that they've made, but that's one that just confounded me.
Well, here's what Ricky Fowler had to say about that penalty.
Yeah, it sucked. But it was kind of just trying to put all that behind me, understand that, playing well the first 3 days and giving myself that cushion is what kind of allows for some mistakes, and you don't have to go out and play a perfect round. On the flip side, if you're four shots back, you may have to go out and put together a damn near perfect round of golf to win. So luckily I didn't need a perfect round today.
It was pretty amazing. You know, Johnny Miller had retired the day before. We'll talk a little bit about that later on in the show. But Paul Azinger steps in and for his first show, actually had to admit on the air he did not know what score Ricky Fowler made on that hole. And they went to Slugger White, the rules official on the scene, and he explains it a little better.
We have to add up how many strokes he made. And then with the two, it's easier like that, and then add two. So he's played five strokes and add two strokes, had a two-stroke penalty, okay? That's the easiest way to go about it.
That may sound easy to him. Didn't sound easy to me. Certainly did.
God bless Slugger. I mean, you know, the rules in golf are you know, you think in place to help or not necessarily benefit the player, but to be fair. And this one doesn't pass the fair test.
Well, we'll move on from that because we could get caught up in the weeds of rules. And
yeah.
We'd have an eight-hour show and then be complaining we don't have enough time.
Then we'd have all the armchair rules people listening, you know, coming after us.
Yeah, that's for sure. We got to give a grill room salute to Johnny Miller, retires from NBC and broadcasting golf. I know your dad was a big part of NBC for a while, but certainly Johnny Miller, outstanding job in the booth over his career.
What a long run. I mean, in my lifetime, there have really been two guys that have stood apart, and I, as analysts to me, or even power guys, and that's Kenny Venturi and Johnny Miller. I mean, there are other great, certainly fantastic announcers, but those two guys have stood out. I mean, when you hear, you know, and Johnny, you know, felt comfortable saying what he felt, whether you liked it or not. And that's not always what you get. And a fixture at NBC, people used to tune in to see what Johnny's going to say. Tremendous run, and obviously respected a lot by the players.
Well, he certainly earned that respect because 1973, and I was there, Oakmont, the United States Open, a Long Island club pro by the name of Gene Borick, shocks the golf world, fires a 65 on Saturday. Everybody in the world of golf is talking about that unbelievable round. Well, the story lasted less than 24 hours because Johnny Miller, on that Sunday, posted a 63, and that was the end of that.
You know, I've played Oakmont, and I just, I can't comprehend 63. And what an incredible moment it was in major championship golf. Stood as the lowest round until Brendan Gray shot 62 at Birkdale in the Open Championship. So, and of course, the Desert Fox winning all those tournaments in Phoenix and Tucson and the Hope. Unbelievable. Bob, let's turn our attention, though, overseas. Speaking of deserts, Saudi Arabia. We talked about the significance of this last week, the first ever international golf tournament in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. And my man, who I've been talking about, Ha Tong Lee, gave Dustin Johnson a match. But Dustin Johnson, who's kind of been off the radar a little bit, comes back and he wins. And now it takes him to 20 wins. It's just incredible. And back to number two in the world rankings.
Yeah, pretty amazing stuff when you look at the body of work of Dustin Johnson. I guess we could make the argument right now, if he never does another thing, he's certainly Hall of Fame worthy with 20 wins and a major to his credit. But I think there's a lot more to come in the game of Dustin Johnson. Let's hear what he had to say regarding that win in Saudi Arabia.
You know, I felt like I was playing well. I just wasn't, you know, I was just missing the fairways. And, you know, this golf course is tough if you're playing from the rough. But I hit the shots that I needed to, you know, at the right times, and you know, I hit some really nice shots coming down the stretch. So I'm pleased, obviously, with the outcome. Not as pleased with the way I played. I think I felt like I should have played a lot better, but very, very pleased with the win. Every win means a lot to me, and I'm very pleased to get back to to number two, and then hopefully that's just more to come in the next few weeks.
Pretty amazing. Dustin Johnson to number two. Justin Rose, by the way, still the number one player in the world, and now the favorite to win the Masters at 11-1. Tiger has dropped way down to 12-1. Pretty interesting betting proposition there, but a nice win by Dustin Johnson.
Bob, think about the last 2 weeks in our game. We had Justin Rose win. We had Bryson DeChambeau win in Dubai. You follow it up with Ricky may only have five wins, but he's a fan favorite. He wins, and DJ goes to Saudi Arabia and wins. How about the health of this game? I mean, and the quality of play we're seeing. For the first 3 days, they destroyed the TPC Scottsdale. They had to get bad weather to calm those guys down. I mean, it's a tremendous start to what could be, I think, one of the greatest years of golf ever. I mean, it's phenomenal. It's great to cover it right now.
You're not going to get any argument from this corner. Speaking of bad weather on Sunday in Phoenix, this past week, the weather at the Monterey Peninsula site of this week's AT&T has not been good. We certainly hope that the weather improves there. Of course, a lot of players are playing there, Jay, because they know in June the U.S. Open's coming back to Pebble Beach, and those that haven't played Pebble Beach want to get a little feel for it. But I'm sure you could educate them to the fact that what they see this week is not going to be the golf course they'll see in June.
No, it certainly will not. I mean, it's nice to get a feel, but it's going to also feel like you played a totally different golf course this week. And that's the one thing that is tough. You mentioned the weather situation. It always seems to be tough this time of year. And, the health of the game, it's just phenomenal. The best players in the world are winning. We've talked about where the four majors are this year. It's going to be awesome. It's just a tremendous time in the game, and I can't wait for this year.
I join you in those sentiments. I think it was absolutely outstanding, the kickoff to 2019, and it's certainly only going to get better.
Our man Alex Maselli, was in attendance at the Saudi International. We'll hear his account of Sergio's action and how Saudi Arabia is planning to grow the game after the break. You're listening to The Groove Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf, the new face of golf, heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, the Armed Forces Radio Network, Audio Boom, Spreaker, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or you can just ask your smart speaker Alexa to play The Groove Room Golf Show, and you'll be connected.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at The Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. The 18th hole at Normandy, well, it's as tough a par 3 as you'll find, measuring 251 yards from the back tee. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com or call 314-862-4884 and enjoy old-school golf at its finest.
Joining us now in the Grill Room, he's the founder and publisher of Morning Read, and he's been globetrotting of late. Alex, welcome back into the country. Want to begin by asking you, I know you've been known to pontificate on occasion, any comparisons between the Pope visiting the UAE and you going to Saudi Arabia at the same time?
No, there's not. The only thing there is that we're, even the Pope's not Italian, I don't think. So, no, there's not.
There's no correlation at all.
All right. I had to clear that up. One other thing I want to clear up. Prior to your trip, Brandel Chamblee on Golf Channel made it known that he thought that players should not participate in a golf tournament in Saudi Arabia. You took the position that they absolutely should participate. Now that you've been there for a week, now that the tournament's over, has your position changed?
No, my position hasn't changed. I think when you're there and you see it, which is probably one of the issues I had with anybody that's critical of the situation, when you see it and understand what's going on and the evolution of the country, you realize that having that golf tournament there was only a boost towards that change in that country. And I just don't understand people that will criticize players, because before you can criticize players for going to that country and playing golf, that means you have to start talking about and looking at people like McDonald's and Starbucks and numerous other companies throughout the world that have businesses in Saudi Arabia. So if players can't go over and earn a living in Saudi Arabia, then why can these other companies? And I just think it's so disingenuous to criticize players when, you know, they're trying to make a living. This is what their job is. They're trying to make a living. And you take a look at Saudi Arabia as it is. If you wind up putting it in isolation, it makes no sense. That's what the problem is with North Korea. North Korea is in isolation. That's why there's the issues they have with North Korea. We don't have those type of issues with Saudi Arabia. They obviously have issues that they're trying to address, and having that golf tournament there only helped them address it in a way that would be suitable for the West.
Correct me if I'm wrong. One of the arguments that you presented was that you felt it would help grow the game of golf. Can you give me an example of how that would be accomplished by players going to make more money that they don't need?
Well, first of all, I would suggest that players are making more money that they don't need. Maybe some of them are, but not all of them. That being said, during the week, there was an announcement made by the Saudi Golf Federation where they're going to make a commitment to build 15 more golf courses in the country between now and 2030. That commitment may not have happened, and most likely would not have happened, if not, in fact, that there was this focus on golf and professional golf in Saudi Arabia this week. So, I can't pinpoint when what a particular event is going to make a difference in what's going to happen in Saudi Arabia. I can't pinpoint when you can say, because of this, that happened. But certainly there is some correlation between having a professional event in Saudi Arabia that's going to be there on an annual basis and the fact that they're trying to grow the game of golf in Saudi Arabia. So it's not any different than any other country. When you expose a country to a certain sport, there's going to be an interest level. How big that interest level will be is unclear, but at least it's growing the game to some extent. And in that particular case, I think that's a positive.
Point well taken. Good on you. Not good on Sergio Garcia. A lot of reports back here about his behavior and then the ultimate disqualification. Give us a firsthand report of what you witnessed.
Well, you know, it's odd because when Sergio was playing on Saturday, he was playing very early. And the incident that happened, or the incidents that happened throughout the front nine of the golf course, didn't really trickle back to any of us. There wasn't that many media there to begin with, but it didn't trickle back to us until we started talking to players coming in, and it was at that point that we started understanding the gravity of the situation. Sergio had already basically left the ground, so no one could talk to Sergio, but it was clear that at that point they decided they have to do something, and the tournament director, to his credit, automatically wanted to disqualify Sergio Garcia for his efforts on Saturday. But, you know, Keith Pelley, the chief executive of the European Tour, was there, and they sat down and they discussed it amongst themselves. And the decision was made pretty early on, near the end of the third round, that they were going to disqualify him. Sergio certainly feels bad about the situation. We had a reporter actually that talked to him at his hotel room that went to visit him because he's a Spanish reporter and they have a relationship. And Sergio was clearly, I'm not going to say distraught, but, you know, disturbed by the fact of what he did and had a realization that what he did was wrong. And, you know, I'm sure if he could do it all over again, you take it back, but that doesn't really matter, because you can't take it back. You can't do it all over again. And I think in the case of Sergio Garcia, he's going to live with that for a little while. People will not forget about what happened there in Saudi Arabia, and it's going to be a while. And, he's going to catch some criticism, and he's going to have to learn how to deal with that criticism. But at the end of the day, it was just a stupid bonehead move, and I don't think there's anybody in Saudi Arabia that week that thought it was anything other than that.
We're talking with Alex Maselli, founder and publisher of Morning Read, just back from Saudi Arabia. Dustin Johnson wins for the first time on the European Tour. How big a victory do you regard that in Dustin Johnson's year going forward?
Well, I think a win is important. And, you know, it's early on in the process, and I think Dustin Johnson, you know, would like to know. I think any player would like to know when they're in that position that they could get the job done. I think the week before that in Dubai, Bryson DeChambeau in the same situation wanted to make sure he'd get the job done. Just like Ricky Fowler in Phoenix this week, knowing that you're in that position, you want to be able to get the job done. You want to know, you want to be able just to rely on yourself that when you get there, you got a really good chance to win. So I think that's a positive. I think also in Dustin's case, it was the four of the top five players in the world were there. So that's another positive. It doesn't matter that, you know, everybody had to travel over there. Dustin had to travel over there too. And it doesn't matter that the greens were slow. Justin Johnson made the adjustments. So I think all of those things are positives for him. And the other thing is he put a new driver in the bag, and I think he feels comfortable with that. And I think that's another one of those things where knowing that that driver will deal, I can deal with that driver when, you know, the heat is on. So I think it was all positives for him. There's no question. And what that means going forward, you know, it's his 20th win worldwide, which one major and 20 wins almost puts you in the Hall of Fame right now. So the question is can you get another major? And I think that's really his focus. So he's got Augusta coming up where he's never really had tremendous results there. But he said that, you know, he's never felt really healthy and well going into Augusta. He feels he's really healthy and well going in now. So I think it's all positives going forward for him. And I think that win could be something that you could look back on and say, you know, that was one of the things that really helped him, propelled him into the 2019 season.
Well, three times during that answer, you said get the job done. That's exactly what you have done, Alex Maselli, in bringing us up to date on what happened in Saudi Arabia. Glad that you're back safe and sound. And it was, as listening to you, deemed a very successful trip, not only for Dustin Johnson, but for Alex Maselli. Good luck at Pebble Beach this week. We'll talk to you next week.
Well, what an unbelievable trip that had to be for our man, Alex Maselli, going to the first ever international golf tournament in Saudi Arabia. Well, when we come back, folks, I call him golf royalty, and he is. He is the incredible little pro, Eddie Marins, and we'll hear from him next on the Grill Room Golf Show, powered by Vertical Groove Golf.
You're listening to the Grill Room.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elstoautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Welcome back to the Grill Room.
Well, Jay, I think we ought to stand up to welcome our next guest back into the Grill Room. We had him on a couple of weeks ago. Everybody loved hearing from the little pro, as I affectionately call him, Eddie Marins, a long-time golf instructor and quite a player in his own right. And we'll get into some of those exploits with Eddie Marins. But, Eddie, say hello to Jay Randolph Jr. I think you knew his dad.
I sure did know his dad. I played with his dad at Congressional in the U.S. Junior, USGA Junior, 1949. It was won by Gabe Brewer, and Jay and I either won that tournament, by the way, let the record show. But Gabe Brewer beat Mason Rudolph in the finals of that.
Bob, to think about all of the things that this gentleman has seen in our game, he's in 11 Hall of Fames. I'm going to say that again, 11 Hall of Fames. He is a treasured part of the game. I called my dad and I said, Dad, I'm going to interview the little pro today. And he said, the great Marins. So, Bob, we're talking to golf royalty.
Yeah, couldn't put it any better, Jay. And let's get right to it. I mean, because as I call him affectionately, the little pro, he's got more great stories than than you could shake a stick at. I'll lead off with, I understand in one of the AT&Ts that you played in, I believe you played in about 15 or 16 of them, little pro, on the seventh hole, that little par three that everybody knows, something rather special occurred. Share that story with us, Eddie.
I was playing with Tony Trabert, the tennis player who was a member here at Bel Air, and it was a horrible, horrible day. Arnold Palmer had played through just in front of us in the television grouping, and Arnold took a 4-iron on that seventh hole, and mind you, it reads 110 yards from the back tee to the green, downhill, and Arnold Palmer hit a 4-iron to that green. And he got his ball up in the air, and it peeled off like a seagull crashing into the sea. He went on to make a 5 on the hole, and that was history for Arnold that year. But the little pro played in the next grouping behind him, and we stood there waiting for Palmer to clear the 7th green, and finally Trabert told the little pro as he stepped to the tee, he said, "Little pro, just pipe that ball in there." Most people would think I could hit it farther than 110 yards downhill with a 3-iron, but I hauled out my trusty 3-iron and hit a glorified chip shot that never got up in the air. It cleared the front bunker and drove true as a marten to its gourd, went right in the hole. And there was an AP photographer on the back of the green. He'd been there all day trying to catch pictures, and he literally froze. He couldn't snap the camera. But my wife was there to give me a kiss on the cheek, and that picture went worldwide. So that was my claim to fame in 16 appearances in the Crosby in those days. It was before the AT&T. It was called the Bing Crosby Pro Am.
How about that, Jay?
Yeah, I mean it's fascinating, Bob, when you think that this is a man that has seen virtually everybody. I mean, from Bob Jones and to Tiger Woods, who's the best, your top three, Eddie? I mean, with the history that you have, with the players you've known, played against, taught, I mean, this is a rare situation for us, Bob, to talk to this man. Who are your top three of all time?
I'm gonna step aside from that a little bit and let you know that the seventh hole was a place where Jim Nance was married 2 or 3 years ago. And it so happened that just within the last year, Jim Nance was presented in Dallas a painting of a picture that came from a chapter in his book about his father who died just after the 2008 U.S. Open at Torrey Pines. And in that chapter, Jim Nance writes about his favorite fivesome of all time. Ooh. How he'd like to be cast in that fivesome. And sure enough, in that fivesome were Ken Venturi, 41, President Bush. Jim Nance was in the picture. The pro at Cypress Point was in that picture. And the little pro was in that picture. I want you to know. So that to me was a great honor, and the fact that it took place on that seventh hole brought back great memories of that hole in one that I made in 1965 there.
Little pro, best two or three players that you've seen over the course of your lifetime.
When I was a young boy, I had the opportunity to play practice rounds and exhibitions with Byron Nelson and Sam Snead both when I was 17 years old. And that introduction led to a lifetime friendship with those guys, and until they both died, we were wonderful friends with Sam Snead and Byron Nelson, and as well, I came to know Ben Hogan through the Ben Hogan Trophy Award that we've created at Bel Air. It's a college presentation that we make at Colonial Country Club each year to the College Player of the Year, but. And those three players, Hogan, Nelson, Snead, I'd put right there with any threesome anybody wanted to come up with. But more recently, I was familiar and friendly with with Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods. So if you want to enlarge it to a six-some, that makes a pretty good six-some right there.
That's certainly a great six-some. A lot of people had their eyes on number 12 for the New England Patriots this past weekend when he won his sixth Super Bowl. And, of course, I'm talking about Tom Brady. But I understand he's pretty talented as a golfer and that you've kind of helped him with his game.
Well, Tom was living out here. He and Giselle had a home up Mandeville Canyon, and they planned to stay here for quite a while. In fact, they were married in St. Monica's Church in Santa Monica. But I was introduced to him by his doctor, Dr. Eletrage, who worked on his shoulder when he needed an operation. And they've become very, very friendly. In fact, Eletrage is a member here at Bel Air now, and I think Tom will become a member in time. But he is a solid 2-4 handicap player who loves to play, and he's getting better at it too. And this past Super Bowl with the Rams and New England, I was pulling for the Rams being from Los Angeles, but I was also pulling for Tom Brady in New England because I've been his teacher and proud to brag about that because I think he's a wonderful human being as well as a very fine golf player.
Bob, Eddie is still giving lessons. If you want to learn from the little pro, you can still do it at Bel Air. And for anyone who wants a lesson, all you have to do is call 310-440-2421 to book a lesson from the legend, a living legend, the little pro at Bel Air.
You know, I've had the opportunity to do a number of things to do with the game of golf in my life. And it did begin with Bobby Jones and included Walter Hagen and Tommy Bolt and all the others. The teaching aspect is the thing that's meant the most to me. That teaching golf, it means that you're trying to help somebody to help themselves and enjoy this great game we call golf. So every time I'm in the midst of giving a golf lesson, I couldn't be happier because I truly love it.
And, of course, if you want some keen insight into the game, Eddie Marens has a book called Swing the Handle, and it really will educate you to maybe take a couple of strokes off. Jay, I'm going to leave it up to you to say goodbye and say thank you. I think anybody that loves this great sport like we do, I know on my end, certainly an honor to have the little pro, Eddie Marens, in the Grow Room.
The time that he has spanned in this game, the individuals that he has influenced, and the joy he has brought is too hard to measure. As I said earlier, golf royalty, a real treat. Eddie, thanks so much for being with us.
It's great to be part of this wonderful game. Whatever is second best is a distant second, I'll tell you that. So let's all dive in and enjoy this game called golf.
Well, now you're up to date on what's going on around the world of golf. That's it for this week.
So on behalf of our executive producer, Janice Self, Jay Randolph Jr., and myself, Bob Bupka, big thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf. Of course, you can like us and follow us on Facebook and on Instagram at the Grill Room Golf Show.
Thanks for spending some time in the Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.